Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivare Dhari Jaya Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Girivare Dhari Jaya Yashoda Nandana Jaya Braja Jana Ranjana Jaya Yashoda Nandana Jaya Braja Jana Ranjana Jaya Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashi Srimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachanine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pastacha Deshatanine. Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. So we have text 46 on the board. We will do both verses 45 and 46 to end the chapter today. So first I'll chant through text 45, and we can do 46 responsively. So text 45 reads, Putran vipratikulan svan pittara putra vatsalaha upalabhante shikshartam naivagam aparoyata. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. A father and mother are always affectionate to their children. When the children are disobedient, the parents chastise them, not due to enmity, but only for the child's instruction and welfare. How did Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad Maharaj, chastise such a noble son? This is what I am eager to know. So text 46, please chant responsively. Kim utanu vashan sadhums. Kim utanu vashan sadhums. Tadrishan guru devatan. Tadrishan guru devatan. Etat kotu halam brahman. Etat kotu halam brahman. Asmakam vidhama prabho. Asmakam vidhama prabho. Pitu putraya yadvesho. Pitu putraya yadvesho. Maranaya prayojitaha. Maranaya prayojitaha. Kim utanu vashan sadhums. Tadrishan guru devatan. Etat kotu halam brahman. Asmakam vidhama prabho. Pitu putraya yadvesho. Maranaya prayojitaha. Please chant.
Thank you.
Vaishnavis. Kimutano Vashan Sadhus. Tajishan Guru Devata. Etako to Halam Brahman. Asmakam Vidama Prabhu. Pitu putraya yadvesho marinaya prayojita kim uttanu vasham sarans tadrishan guru devatan itako tuvalam paham. Asmakam vidamaparo pitu putraya yadvesho maranaya prayojita. Word for word synonyms, please repeat. Kim uta, much less. Anuvashan, to obedient and perfect sons. Sadhun, great devotees. Sadrishan, of that sort. Guru Devatan, honoring the Father as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Etat, this. Kotuhalam, doubt. Brahman, O Brahmana. Asmakam, of us. Vidhama, dissipate. Prabho, O my Lord. Pituhu, of the Father. Putraya, unto the Son. Yat, which. Dveshaha, envy. Maranaya, for killing. Prayojitaha, applied. So, Yudhishthir Maharaj, we just read text 45 where Yudhishthir Maharaj was inquiring that I understand that parents chastise disobedient children for their well-being, and they don't do it out of envy. But there's something wrong with this picture, because I see a father chastising a very noble son, namely Prahlad Maharaj. So now he's going to continue inquiring from Narada Muni. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhishthir further inquired, how was it possible for a father to be so violent toward an exalted son who was obedient, well-behaved, and respectful to his father? O Brahmana, O Master, I have never heard of such a contradiction as an affectionate father's punishing his noble son, with the intention of killing him. Kindly dissipate our doubts in this regard. Purport. In the history of human society, an affectionate father is rarely found to chastise a noble and devoted son. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhishthir wanted Narada Muni to dissipate his doubt. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. So we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam is basically questions and answers. It's about all we're going to find in the Srimad Bhagavatam is somebody's asking questions and somebody else is answering them. We have Parikshit Maharaj inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami. We have the sages of Naimisharanya inquiring from Suta Goswami. We have Vidura questioning from Maitreya. We find Yudhishthira questioning Narada Muni. And the list goes on. Srimad Bhagavatam is simply a compilation of questions and answers. So what is the purpose of asking questions? The world is full of questions and answers. Prabhupada says, even the birds are questioning when they wake up in the morning, chirp, 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 chirp. One bird is asking, where is the food? Where is the food? And the other bird responds, here it is, here it is. The man in the marketplace, what is the price? And the other person responds, this is the price. So there are unlimited questions and answers. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is not composed of such questions and answers. So what is the purpose then in the Srimad Bhagavatam of questions and answers? Leela Manjari. To inquire about Krishna and his devotees. That is indeed what they are doing. But what is the purpose of those questions, Bhakti Mikey? I called on Bhakti Mikey. To enlighten the world about the absolute truth, that is certainly a result of such questions and answers. But why are such questions being posed, looking for answers? Jai Baladev Prabhu. One will definitely achieve the highest satisfaction of the soul by such questions and answers. But why are such questions and answers necessary and being engaged in? Elementary. Another try. Okay, you're getting warmer. We're going to apply, because by such questions and answers, we can apply the answers to our life. And this is why we're asking questions, because why are we asking questions? Dr. Carlos. Yeah, we already said that one, about to get to know Krishna, but Jitendriya Prabhu. Because we're in the mode of ignorance. Okay, one more attempt. Thank you. Thank you, Bhaktin Alex. To dispel doubts. If I know something, what do I need to ask a question for? So we have many enemies, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, envy. But all enemies rest on one enemy. And that enemy is doubts. Ignorance is caused by doubts. Or doubts are caused by ignorance. It's really basically the same thing. When we say ignorance, it really means doubts. Has anybody ever experienced in our attempts at executing Krishna consciousness that we often hesitate to surrender, We hesitate to give a little bit more of ourself. I've given one corner of my heart, but I'm not so sure I want to give another corner. You know, I've surrendered to a certain extent, but I'm a little reluctant to surrender a little bit more. This is all caused by doubts. So I wanted to read one verse from the first canto, Prabhupada's purport included. So this is from Canto 1, Chapter 15, entitled The Pandavas Retire Timely. This is text 31. The translation says, this is discussing Arjuna. Translation, because of his possessing spiritual assets, the doubts of duality were completely cut off. Thus he was freed from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. Anybody would like that to happen in their life? To be free from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. And how did that happen? That the doubts of duality were completely cut off. There was no longer any chance of his becoming entangled in birth and death. Zero probability. For he was freed from material form. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Doubts of duality begin from the misconception of the material body, which is accepted as the self by less intelligent persons. The most foolish part of our ignorance is our identifying this material body with the self. Everything in relation with the body is ignorantly accepted as our own. Doubts due to misconceptions of myself and mine, in other words, my body, my relatives, my property, my wife, my children, my wealth, my country, my community, and hundreds and thousands of similar illusory contemplations, cause bewilderment for the conditioned soul. By assimilating the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from such bewilderment, because real knowledge is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, is everything, including one's self. I won't read the entire purport. Prabhupada has made the point here that simply by assimilating the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from this bewilderment of identifying the self with the body. Because, why? Real knowledge is given. And what is that real knowledge? That the Supreme Personality of Godhead is everything, including one's self. That is sambandha jnana. What is the actual identity of the self in relation to the Supreme? So, later in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll look at one more verse here. This is from the third canto, chapter 22, the marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, text number 7. This is Svayambhuva Manu, speaking to Kardama Muni. And he says, I have fortunately been instructed by you, and thus great favor has been bestowed upon me. I thank God that I have listened with open ears to your pure words. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that first, the desiring candidate must find a bona fide spiritual master, and then he must very eagerly receive instructions from him and execute them. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 7, text 1, Maya Sakta Manar Parta Yogam Yunjan Marashraya Asamshayam Samagram Mam Yatag Yas Yasi Taj Trinu. My dear Arjuna, please hear from me. Please hear from me the science on how to become free from all doubts. By listening to me about this science of bhakti yoga, and by executing this, you will be able to know me in full, free from all doubts. So what is the first step in that science? Krishna is telling Arjuna, I have this wonderful science to give you called bhakti yoga. And if you follow this science, you will get to know me in full, free from all doubts. So please hear about it. So what's the first step? Hearing, well, there's a step before that. Chapter 4, text 34. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upatekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvidarshinaha. Approach a person to hear from. We can't hear unless we approach the person to hear. So this is the very first step in this science of how to know Krishna free from all doubts. That you please approach a bona fide spiritual master. And what do you do when you approach? You inquire relevant inquiries. And what happens when you ask a question? You hear the answer. And submissive inquiry means I'm going to implement the answer in my life. I will assimilate it and execute. And how does that question and answer session become fruitful? How does it become pregnant with potency? Through the service attitude of the disciple. By inquiring with a service attitude and applying the answer with a service attitude, actual results come. Menial service is explained. So Srila Prabhupada explains in his own life that one day, as a very young grihastha, 26 years of age, one of his friends invited him to go see some Vaishnava sadhu. And Prabhupada was reluctant because his father had invited so many sadhus to their home and he saw so many different types and he wasn't too impressed. But his friend dragged him. He said, you must come and hear this sadhu. All right, I'll go. So they entered the ashram where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was discoursing. And Prabhupada and his friend entered. They paid their obeisances. And just as they were getting up from paying their obeisances, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta turned to them. He pointed to them. He looked directly at them and said, you are educated young men. You should preach the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English language. Srila Prabhupada was taken aback. How? You know, he hadn't even completely got up from paying obeisances. You know, and generally when you meet somebody for the first time, it's like, hi, what's your name? Have a seat. Where are you from? He didn't know them from Joe on the street. And he immediately said, you are educated young men. You should preach the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English language. So Prabhupada explains that as it's said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that sadhu sangha, sarva shastre koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. That just by meeting an advanced devotee for one moment, all the scriptures say this. This is not just Krishna Das Kaviraj's idea. Krishna Das is saying that all the bhakti shastras say this, that if one can have the great fortune of meeting an advanced devotee for just one moment, all of life's perfections can be obtained in that one moment. How long is a moment? The Vedic astronomical system says that lava matra means 1/11th of a second. Practically no time. So what does that mean? That in one moment, I mean, we've all met devotees, and I think we've spent more than 1/11th of a second in their association. So, but what does that mean? That in one moment's association of an advanced devotee, one can obtain all perfection in life. Srila Prabhupada explains in his own life how that happened. That he had the great fortune of meeting a person, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was fully engaged with body, mind, and words, fully engaged in the loving devotional service of Krishna. So that by meeting that personality, what could not be achieved in thousands of lifetimes could now be achieved in one moment. Why? What happened in that one moment? What happened in that one moment where Srila Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that guaranteed all perfection in life? What happened? He took the instruction to heart. So what happened in that one moment was he received from his spiritual master the specific instruction on what is my devotional service in this lifetime. Srila Prabhupada was raised in a pure Gaudiya Vaishnava family and culture. Yet until he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he didn't have a life's mission in service to Lord Chaitanya. So Prabhupada explains, this is how one moment's association with a pure devotee guarantees all perfection in our life. Because they will give us, they will reveal to us what is our, you know, individual unique service to the Sankirtan mission. Now, many of us will say, well, that hasn't happened to me. So there's a caveat here, and that caveat is one has to meet a completely self-realized soul on the level of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was so pure and so completely self-realized. No ignorance of identifying the self with the body or the mind or the intelligence or the ego. He was so completely self-realized in pure knowledge of what his identity was in relation to Krishna that as soon as he saw another soul, he could see right past all those layers that cover the soul, right down to the naked soul. And he could identify right on the spot without even asking, what's your name, where are you from? He could identify on the spot what service is this person meant to do And what does that service do? What is it about the service? That service connects us to Krishna in a particular way. It reveals to us, ultimately, what our actual identity is in relation to Krishna. So now we might say, well, I don't have such a person in my life that's just going to point to me and give me this instruction for the rest of my life. But it's not that one only can do this by meeting such a person, like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur or our Srila Prabhupada. So today we have many, many, many opportunities to hear from advanced devotees, devotees who are more advanced than us. They might not be, you know, on that level of completely knowing their unique identity in Krishna Lila or something. But they know the science of Krishna consciousness. And we, the aspiring devotees, we need to take shelter of persons who can work with us and actually tailor service according to our nature, our propensity, our abilities, in such a way that we are each going to make advancement. One shoe doesn't fit all. But of course, there are general instructions of service. When we come to the temple, generally, when we're new, the instruction is, okay, Prabhu, Harinam Sankirtan, scrub some pots, clean the ashram, distribute some books, etc., etc. So there are general service instructions that are given to us, and they're all good. We should not balk that, who am I that I have to clean the bathrooms? Or who am I that I have to wash pots? I'm a college-educated person, after all. Why should I be washing the floors? No, all services are meant to cleanse the heart, to awaken qualities like humility and simplicity and cleanliness, etc. And gradually, gradually, as our senior devotees get to know us better and better, the more they can now give tailored instructions for our service. Yes, Srila Prabhupada or Srila Bhakti Siddhanta might be able to just look at a person the first time they walk in the door and immediately tailor an instruction for their life. That does not mean that those are the only persons that we can take instruction from. So today, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Srila Prabhupada, when he realized that his days here in physical manifestation were numbered, when he realized that he's not going to be here forever in physical form, he instructed his disciples that you become regular gurus. You take up that mantle of being a regular guru and instruct the world on how to become Krishna conscious. One should not pose themselves as some kind of super guru, you know, that I'm on this big, big level and I'm pointing my finger at you and instructing you that you should do this for the rest of your life. If one's not on that level. Similarly, the disciple, the student, should not blindly think, oh, if somebody gives me some instruction, I have to do that for the rest of my life, and I can never question it, and I can never try to work with it. And you know, we're in relationships of give and take, developing love and trust. So this is a movement of personalism. So the disciples have to be personal. And our gurus, Shiksha gurus, Diksha gurus, all sorts of gurus, have to be personal. And by working together and by getting to know each other, it takes a while to know each other. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati knew Prabhupada the minute, not the minute, the moment Srila Prabhupada came into his presence. Bhaktisiddhanta knew who he was, down on the level of the soul. So he could understand what Krishna wanted for that soul to do in this lifetime. So we may not be on that level, being able to perceive who each other is. But we can take a more down-to-earth, realistic methodology and get to know each other on a very personal, down-to-earth platform. And by as the more the guru knows the disciple, the more, as time progresses, the guru can tailor the instructions for that disciple. So it behooves us, then, to allow ourselves to be known. So how do we allow ourselves to be known? What example are we finding in the Srimad Bhagavatam of how disciples allowed themselves to be known? Yeah, I'm not asking of which persons. I'm asking what was their example. By inquiring. And why do we inquire? To dispel doubts. If we're not making ourselves known by honestly laying on the table what our doubts are, then those doubts will never get addressed. And we will continue to live a life of falsity. And how can you make any advancement? And doubts do not simply mean, you know, philosophical doubts like, I don't really understand how, you know, Vishnu is considered a plenary portion of Krishna rather than Krishna being a plenary portion of Vishnu. I mean, that's one kind of doubt. That's one kind of doubt, a philosophical doubt. And those are all legitimate doubts that should be put on the table. But here, doubts refer to also, what is my service? We read this verse in the third canto of Svayambhuva Manu speaking to Kapila Muni. Kardama Muni. And his inquiry was, because Manu has the job of basically managing the universe. You know, managing one temple is a headache. Imagine trying to be an administrator within the whole universe. So from Manu comes the laws for mankind. So Manu has the job of administering what the functions of all the varnas and the ashrams are, amongst other duties. So he was inquiring from Kardama Muni how to execute his service. And when Kardama Muni enlightened him with so much knowledge, then he said, oh, thank God that I heard you with open ears, because now I can execute my service with confidence. So dispelling doubts doesn't mean just putting our philosophical inquiries on the table. Srila Prabhupada, by his own example, showed how to inquire, how to dispel doubts. He said, I never asked one question to my spiritual master except, how may I serve you? So, Srila Prabhupada didn't have too many doubts, so he was able to just directly ask that question, how may I serve you? We also can ask that question, how may I serve? But in that act of questioning, we need to put on the table the doubts that we have, that I have this kind of propensity, I have this kind of aspiration, I have this kind of reluctance, I don't know how to handle those things in relation to the instructions that I've received. And in that loving, trusting relationship of give and take, of getting to know one another, then our gurus can get to know us better. And when they know us better, then they can be even more expert at giving us service and instruction. And that service, instruction, advice doesn't necessarily come from just one person. We can have different voices in our life that speak to us. If they're working as a team, those different voices can harmonize. Isn't it nice in kirtan to have different voices? It would be really monotone to just have one voice all the time. So in kirtan, we can harmonize with our different voices. So similarly, there's an art to how to harmonize different voices. Those different voices shouldn't conflict and cause just a bunch of noise. One person's singing Hare Krishna in one tune, another person's singing Hare Krishna in a different tune or a different beat or a different key, or that's not harmony. So different voices can harmonize in instructing the disciple. So that means achintya bheda bheda tattva. Simultaneously, they're one voice, but they're different. Unity and diversity. So the onus is really on us to read the Srimad Bhagavatam and learn from the example of the great devotees there how they made advancement. And they made advancement by making very sincere inquiries, not just about philosophy, but about how they could execute service according to circumstances, etc., so that they could gradually realize what is my eternal service to Krishna in my spiritual form. So this is the science of bhakti yoga, which Krishna delineates in Bhagavad Gita. There's the sambandha, what is my relationship, and then there's the abhideya, how to execute that relationship. And that abhideya will have a general formula which we all follow. But then there will be specific formulas for each of us. So it behooves us to be very personal. If we feel like I'm not getting that kind of personal instruction, I'm just being treated like a number, I'm just getting general instructions, probably the problem lies in the fact that we are not coming forward and putting our doubts on the table. So one should have faith in the qualifications of their teacher. One doesn't just throw their doubts out at just anybody. But through careful study, one should have confidence that I can inquire submissively like this, reveal my mind. So this is Yudhishthir ending the chapter here. With his inquiries to Narada Muni, that I am bewildered to see how a father could chastise such a noble son as Prahlad Maharaj. So this is my doubt, and I'm asking you to please dispel it. So we'll end there, and tomorrow we'll begin with Chapter 5. So, see if there's any discussion. Okay, Leela Manjari.
My question is, I see in my life and in the life of others that devotees are carefully following the process, following the four regulative principles and chanting, and still, like, sometimes they're unhappy. So what should be a response when, like, we find ourselves in unhappy circumstances? How do we deal with it? What should be the right attitude?
So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter that susukham kartam avyayam, that this devotional service is blissfully performed. And Prabhupada said, if you're performing devotional service but you're not happy, it means that you're doing something wrong. And generally, what is that something wrong? That something wrong, I mean, there's many reasons. Like, I mean, I'm just saying very commonly, that something wrong is that we're executing devotional service on the external platform, going through the motions, thinking that I've been instructed to follow the four regular principles, chant 16 rounds a day, go to Mangal Arati, offer Arati, and that's all well and good, and we should do all those things. But the instruction is not do those things. The instruction is do those things in Krishna consciousness. So why are we doing these things, but we're not doing them in Krishna consciousness? The reason we're not doing them, because if we were doing them in Krishna consciousness, we would be happy. So the reason we're not doing all this activity in Krishna consciousness is because we're harboring doubts. We actually are harboring doubts. So that is the impediment. So Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that these doubts have to be slashed. They have to be killed. They're like demons. And they have to be destroyed with the weapon of knowledge. And it doesn't mean book knowledge. It means with knowledge of what is my real position. What is my real identity? How can I uncover that real identity? So if we're unhappy, we're most likely we're harboring some doubts. For example, one doubt that is very commonly harbored is, I'm not actually feeling satisfied with my program, with my service, whatever arrangement there is in my life, but I can't approach anybody and talk about it because that would mean I'm a bad devotee. That would mean I'm not submissive. That would mean I'm not surrendered. So I don't think I can be honest and approach a fellow devotee or an authority or whatever and express the fact that I actually have this desire to do this other service over here, because it's something that I feel like I could really give my heart to. But I doubt I can do that because I'll probably be labeled a bad devotee. So that means we have doubts about our relationship with our superiors, that they're going to bite me, they're going to chastise me, they're not going to lovingly listen to me as a person. So these doubts have to be dispelled. If we just harbor doubts for the rest of our life, we'll go nowhere. We'll go nowhere. Every single doubt has to be destroyed before you can go back to Godhead. And no, it's a fact. And at what stage are doubts destroyed? During the anartha nivritti stage, doubts are getting eliminated. But they're not absolutely eliminated. So Krishna says, my asakta manaparta yogam yunjan marashraya asamshayam samagramam yata yasyasi tachchanu. When one comes to the stage of asakti, complete attachment to what is my identity in relation to Krishna, complete attachment to what is my specific service in relation to Krishna. So doubts are going to haunt us until we make it through asakti, which is the step before bhava, which is like seven, you know, five steps away from where we are now in anartanavritti. Four steps or whatever it is. So if we don't work on here, and anartanavritti is where we're supposed to be dispelling the big, big, big gross doubts. And then in nishta and ruchi, we do a little bit more fine-tuning of the real, you know, kind of subtle doubts that are hiding in the corners. And then in asakti, we get rid of the vapors of doubts that are still lingering as aromas in the background. So we got to start dealing with it right here in the here and now. We have to, like, be humble and realize that we're all just a bunch of ordinary people, and we're just trying to pursue Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter where, if I wear the title, you know, guru, or I wear the title administrator, or I wear the title brand new bhakta. We're all just ordinary folks trying to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and make a little advancement in Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. So we should never be guilty of hesitating to put our doubts on the table, and we should especially never be guilty of, when we're in the position of having somebody put their doubts on our table, that we turn around and criticize and chastise and make them feel like this is improper for you to come up with these doubts. So there has to be proper etiquette and proper Vaishnava interactions. Then our doubts can be dispelled. Then, susukam kartam, devotional service is blissfully engaged in. Is that all right? Okay, hey Manshu. He's got the microphone, so we'll go with hey Manshu first.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for such a wonderful class. There's many questions in my head, but I think this one probably is important for me. Rupa Goswami says one must associate with seniors who are affectionate, like-minded. So he mentions this quality of being like-minded, and you were explaining how we have to reveal our hearts, and a relationship takes time to cultivate. So one of the things I sort of felt early on in my spiritual life was this doubt came up that Prabhupada said so many things, has written so many things, and he did so many things, and he inspired so many different types of devotional services. And sometimes devotees, senior devotees, will say, this is what Prabhupada wanted, or this is what Prabhupada wanted. And I started thinking to myself, it seems like this is how they're inspired by Prabhupada, that this is what Prabhupada wanted. You know what I'm saying? Because he said so many things, you know? So as a follower, like you said, just this little humble soul trying to make some advancement, it seems easier to just sort of connect with some senior devotee whose mood you can relate with in terms of this must be what Prabhupada would have wanted. And then you also see this is supported by the Shastras and things like that. And then one will drive great inspiration from there. And it's a little bit, you know, perhaps material because you're accepting an authority based on where you're at, but because they're connecting to Krishna, some purification happens, blah, blah, blah. But then what happens is, because you're in a society, there's other authority structures, there's other authorities, and they're inspired in a different way. And this might create doubt for the little disciple fellow who was just like, you know, I'm just a little guy, and I thought this is what Prabhupada would want from me, but then this is also being said, and this is also being said. And sometimes it can be a little bewildering. I was wondering if you have any thoughts to share on this point.
It is a fact that in our conditioned state, we will be attracted to different moods and different visions, right? And that's perfectly okay. Self-realization begins with, who am I on this level? Self-realization does not mean, what is my identity in Goloka? Am I a gopi that, like, picks flowers and makes garlands? Or am I a cowherd boy that arm wrestles with Krishna? Or am I a cow that gives the milk to make the burfi? Yeah, someday that will be realized. But hello, back down here on planet Earth, what is my identity right now? So we have these bodies, both gross and subtle. And according to our material makeup, we're going to have a particular identity. And, you know, if I have a human body, I'm not going to make advancement by pretending I have a cockroach body and trying to act like a cockroach. We have to act according to our psychophysical nature, but do it for Krishna. So our motto actually is, do what you love to do for Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada came, there were no devotees. He said, I was wandering in the streets and I found some string and I found a gourd and I found some sticks and I put them all together and I created, well, he said, we will call this the International Society of String Band. In other words, what he said, that just like you can go on the street and pick up some string and some sticks and a gourd and put them together and have a musical instrument, similarly, I just went in the streets and picked up the trash. These people that were coming, you know, I just picked up these lost souls and I put them together. And we have created the International Society of String Band. So he, due to it being an emergency, there's no people, there's no devotees, due to his 100% purity, he was able to take so many disciples, and despite what their propensities were for Varna or Ashram or anything else, he was able to say, let's do this. Harinam, book distribution, whatever it was, and everybody surrendered completely. They were like surrendered. They were blissful. They were high. Why? Prema bhakti yaha hoite. We chant every morning, from him ecstatic prema emanates. So when you come into the association of a prema bhakta, then you are going to get swept up in his vast aura of prema, prema bhakti yaha hoite. From him, ecstatic prema emanates. And if you come within that emanation, you're going to get swept up and you're going to become so high, you can do anything. Even if you're crippled, you can walk and dance. Look at Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. Invalid. 125 years old or something. He couldn't even stand up, what to speak of walk. But when he came to Lord Chaitanya's birth site, the holy dham also, prema bhakti yaha hoite. So when he came to the holy dham of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth site, he jumped out of his basket and danced in ecstasy, jumping up and down. But more than these young bhaktas can do. So yes, when we come into the presence of a person who has such an aura, we can surrender and do anything beyond the limitations of our physical and, you know, gross and subtle bodies. But when Prabhupada understood that he's not going to be here forever, he then instructed his disciples that now you become regular gurus and carry on this mission. And he requested that we try to implement the principles of Varnashrama Dharma. Your question yesterday. Instituting the principles of Varnashrama Dharma doesn't mean every nitty-gritty detail of how it was done in so-called Vedic times. Basically, He just wanted that people be engaged according to their propensities. Why? Because if you do what you love for Krishna, you're going to make a lot of advancement. If you're doing it for Krishna, that's the caveat. You can't be doing it for your own pleasure. That's why you have to do such things only under the guidance of senior devotees. So there's many senior devotees in our movement, and they'll all have different moods. Because Prabhupada had, you know, a whole huge list of desires of what he wanted done. The science preaching, the Gurukula, you know, the farm communities, the deity worship, the book printing, the Harinam. So much. A big, long list. Prasadam restaurants, festivals. You know, you can't do it all. But we might find ourselves gravitating, like, oh, I'm really attracted to the Bhaktivedanta Institute and scientific preaching. Or I'm attracted to establishing gurukulas and teaching children. Or I'm attracted to managerial type work. Or I'm attracted to janitorial type work. So we have to find devotees who are not just doing things because I want to do it. They are sincerely doing what they're doing because they're advanced enough. They're doing it to please Krishna. They have a vision, they have a mood, and we like that mood. We can relate to that mood, and we can take shelter of them, and they can engage us according to our propensity. So affection means I get to know you. It's not impersonal. See, if I own a, you know, grocery store or something, and I just hire people, that's not affection. Okay, I'm going to hire you as the cashier, and you're going to be the stock boy, and you're going to be the janitor, and, you know. But affection between guru and disciple means the guru actually knows you. You're not just a number on a list. You're not just somebody that they hear about through the grapevine. They have personal interaction, just like a parent does to the child. So when that affection is really there, then they can engage us as the doctor prescribes medicine to the patient. They can engage us in such a way that's good for us. If they see that we're too attached, I only will play music for Krishna because I'm a musician. I won't do anything else. That's unhealthy. Then they won't engage us like that. Then they'll say, first you spend 3 months cleaning the bathrooms. And when you get a little purified, then we'll talk about it again. So if you hear different voices because there's different moods and different visions, well, this brings us to the point now that you have to make a choice. Where is my guru? One shouldn't be bewildered by listening to so many different voices. There can be different voices, but one has to now gravitate towards that voice that I can relate to. It's not unhealthy to hear different voices. Just by reading Prabhupada's books, you're going to hear all of his ideas. So it's not unhealthy to hear different voices. What's unhealthy is that you don't, like, pinpoint where's my relationship developing. You're not developing a relationship somewhere where you can take up that voice as the main voice in your life while respecting all voices. So it all rests on us. We have to dispel our doubts. We have to dispel our doubts. Okay, we don't want to take too much time, but Acharya Nishtha Prabhu.
Thank you, Matsi. My question is that you were describing at very advanced levels, the soul comes to know of his spiritual identity. Now, is that something that is cultivated or it develops as one advances in bhakti, or is it already existing in the soul and it's just uncovered?
Okay, so Acharya Nishtha Prabhu is asking a more of an ontological question, that is the sarup of the jiva already there since eternity, and it simply needs to be uncovered, like you would take the wrappings off of a package and reveal the package, the contents of the package? Or is the sarup of the soul not there, and it has to be implanted, like a seed is planted, and gradually develops? So that is a discussion that has been debated amongst the acharyas. It's almost like another achintya, beta-beta situation, that the sarupa of the jiva is simultaneously already there, but yet simultaneously has to be bestowed. So the understanding, and we should first of all understand that there are many things that are going to be achintya or inconceivable, that we're never going to have necessarily a perfect answer, an answer that perfectly satisfies our meager intelligence. So the best answer that I've come to, I mean, the answer that I've come to be most happy with is that the sarupa of the jiva is already existing in the mind of Krishna. In other words, Krishna has a purpose for us. Krishna has us marked in his mind, who we are and what we're going to be doing. Yet that sarup is implanted in the heart of the jiva when one comes in contact. Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. That Krishna sends sadhus in our life to plant the bhakti bij, to plant the seed. So there's nothing there before the seed is planted, but the seed contains all the information. There's an infinite amount of information in that seed, and that seed then fructifies, germinates, germinates and blossoms and like that and grows. So then the debate is, well, gosh, is the soul just a blank slate and then the seed comes in and gets implanted? Or is the soul not a blank slate and the seed is just activated, like it's kind of already there and it just gets activated? So our great acharyas have debated this question, and the conclusion is that it's achintya. So our understanding is that it at least is there in Krishna's mind. However blank you want to say the soul is, ultimately they're not really blank, because in Krishna's mind they've been marked, that this is my servant like this. But Krishna sends particular sadhus in our life through many, many lifetimes to make impressions on us and to plant that seed and water that seed. And one day will come where we're going to say, I want to serve Krishna like this. And it looks like it's coming from me. It's my desire. But actually, it was Krishna's desire that I serve him like that. But he's giving me the desire to serve like that. So where does desire originate? Does it desire in the self, or does it originate in the self, or does it originate in Krishna? So that's inconceivable, because the soul is a part of Krishna. So the ultimate understanding is that it actually originates in Krishna, but it manifests as though it's originating in the self. So all we have to worry about, we can't worry about these achintya things, all we have to worry about is Prabhupada's instruction that you simply follow the process of sadhana bhakti. And if you do so nicely by constantly dispelling doubts as you go along the way, along the way, along the way, you are guaranteed to come to the level of bhava where one's sarup is revealed. How it happens may be a mystery, but when it happens, we will no longer be concerned with how it happens. We'll just know that it happened. through, by serving the Sankirtan mission, Prabhupada guaranteed that that sarup would be understood. But we shouldn't be too concerned about what is our sarup. We should just be concerned, what's my service right here and now in Chicago Temple? Am I the pot washer? Am I the temple president? Am I the pujari? Am I the book distributor? We haven't even comprehended what is my, you know, function in this time and place. And we're all concerned about what's my function way back there in Goloka. We can't get there from here, actually, until we deal with the here and now. So we got to get into the mood of putting our doubts on the table and figuring out what is my position right now. And if at every moment in our life we're simply dealing with what is my position right now, then we're guaranteed to get to that point of Sarup City. Because there's no moment except this moment. The only moment that exists is the moment that exists right now. So if we're not dealing with the moment that is in front of us right now, then we're living in total illusion. Reality is only right now. The past is gone, and the future, we don't know what that is. So how is it reality is right now. What am I doing right now? So let me find those people that can instruct me in the best way for right now. We're going to end there. I'm sorry that I had to say no to some of you with your hands upraised. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Like you said, it is a hotly debated topic, what you were telling Shashtra, but the point about that Krishna has already in his mind Marku in a particular way, is there a reference for that?